Golf's Flowgas Irish Am at County Sligo Golf Club with Flowgas, proud sponsor of the Irish Men's Amateur Open Championship 2024.
And we've reached the end of day one of the Flowgas Irish Amateur Open, and the leaderboard here at sunny County Sligo Golf Club in Ross's Point looks like this. An 18-year-old is top of the pile, Gavin Tiernan from County Louth. A superb round of 6 under par, 65. He's doing his leaving cert in a few weeks' time, and he enjoys a one-shot lead over a couple of heavy hitters. Liam Nolan from Galway, the chemical engineering student who was a finalist here in the west of Ireland a couple of years ago. He knows County Sligo pretty well. He's on 5 under par alongside Matthew McLean from Malone Golf Club, who in Irish amateur golf circles leads little or no introduction. But behind that, some familiar names. Two-time former Irish Am winner Colm Campbell, 3 under par from Warren Point. County Sligo's TJ Ford and County Sligo's Rory O'Connor also on 3 under par after rounds of 68 today. The West of Ireland winner here, back at the end of March, early April, Keith Egan from Carton House has started solidly as well. A round of 69 today for 2 under par. He's currently tied for 8th at the end of day one and in excellent shape. And inside the tied for 15th, if you like, Hugh Foley, 2021 West of Ireland champion, 1 under par round today. Sean Keeling from Rogenstown, 1 under as well. So plenty of familiar heavy hitters in the top half of this leaderboard. Let's have a word with the tournament director of the Flowgas Irish Amateur Open, Mark Worley, who's been here since 5:30 this morning. And I imagine, Mark, you could have scarcely imagined as perfect a weather day, first of all, as day one of the Irish Am.
Very unusual, all right, Austin, for those of us that are accustomed to the west of Ireland here in sheeting rain sideways in March or April. But yeah, I mean, fantastic day, really conducive to good golf, and the players had fun out there by the looks of that leaderboard that you've just gone through there. So I think we're pretty happy with where things are overall. Yeah.
Conducive to low scoring. What has struck you today?
Yeah, I suppose what struck me initially, just looking at the stats from today, because we're reviewing the stats with a view to tomorrow's course setup. First of all, is the fact that both nines played pretty even in terms of scoring. I mean, the conventional wisdom today, with the wind coming into on the way back, was that we might see people make their scores on the way out and then just defend them and hold them on the way back. And that was certainly the way early on with Liam Nolan, Matt McLean, among the early starters at 9 o'clock. The wind was maybe a little bit fresher then, still very negotiable at maybe around 12 to 15 kilometres an hour. But they definitely made their scores on the way out. What we saw in the afternoon was more of an even approach in relation to scoring between the first nine and the second nine. And in fact, some of the later players recovered from bad starts. I mean, Sean Keeling, who a lot has been said about in the run up to the event, he was plus two after nine. So you'd think then at that stage he's really struggling in the overall context of the championship. But he came back in 3 under, so he's where he needs to be, I suppose. They might say at 1 under par overall. The overall scoring average, so we had 22 players under par. That's pretty much, I suppose, what we might have expected. The average score, 74 exactly today. 74.00 out of 100 with 138 players.
So County Sligo not playing that easy when you hear an average score like that.
No, but again, we'd be relatively, I suppose, that would have been within the ballpark of what we would have expected, because referring back to the handicap system, of which much has been said in the last couple of years since it was introduced, the course rating for the Black Tees in County Sligo is 75.9. So a scratch player would be expected in sort of normal conditions to play in 76. So if you assume then you know, the field has played to plus two here on average today. That's really what an average score of 74 gross will tell us from today. So not a pushover by any means. It's in the ballpark of where it should be in terms of the test that it's presenting, and with conditions similar, maybe a little bit more breeze tomorrow. It will be interesting to see where that leading score ends up after round two.
Okay, so in terms of the stats you've garnered from today's opening round, can you just, without giving anything away, can you to what extent do they inform pin positions tomorrow morning for the second round, etc.?
Yeah, I suppose we would have had on Tuesday here, we would have mapped out a plan with Mark Miller, the head greenkeeper, for the week. And I suppose what today has basically told us is we should stick to our plan for now. So we're not really kind of looking at making any major changes. I suppose what I would say is that, like, we're not looking at length as being the defender of the course this week, because the conditions are such and the standard of the players is such that it's not really going to be possible to create a major defence by lengthening the course much more than what it is now. But there are a couple of holes actually where moving the tee up will present players with choices that they have to make rather than just bombing it with a driver. So two holes that we're looking at from that point of view are 7 and 14. 14 for obvious reasons with the penalty area ditch that comes into play at a certain carry from the back tees with the wind into, that can become a bit of a nothing drive. They can basically just, you know, hit it as far out there within their sort of capabilities as possible, and the wind will hold it up short of the penalty area. Whereas, you know, the further up that tee goes, it becomes more of a sort of, you know, what club do I play here now from the tee? Where do I want to place the ball and position the ball? Same with 14 with the bunkers. So if the tee is further back, it's possible for the players to take an iron there or to lay up short of the bunkers and not be out of position. If we move the tee forward there, it becomes much more physically difficult for the players to lay up because they'll have to play so short, and driver will become potentially a choice there. And that's one of the observations that we've made in relation to that. With everything else, I think, you know, we've with the wind sort of forecast to blow in the same direction that it currently is for the rest of the week, I think we're probably looking at very minimal change to the way that we set the course up today.
And just as a matter of it, purely for my curiosity, who has the final say in where the pin placements will be? Is that you? Is it Mark Miller? Is there a committee that make the call late at night?
I suppose ultimately the buck stops with me, Austin. If somebody's not happy with the pin position, it's me that they'll come to verbally decapitate in the tournament fan afterwards. But yeah, I mean, while I'm ultimately responsible, I rely on, you know, Mark's expertise in particular, but also, you know, I'll have chats with some of the more experienced people around County Sligo, and also some of the players. Believe it or not, we do actually talk to some of the more experienced players, some of the older players, about the course setup as well, to get their view on, you know, what might be proportionate in terms of the test that we'll present for the week. Ultimately, we want to present a reasonable test. We don't want to, on the one hand, make it too difficult and make it a war of attrition, basically, particularly in these conditions. It shouldn't be that way. But we also want to ensure that the course plays the way that the designers intended. And one of the things we do for the championships that the members don't normally have here, for instance, is we lay out bound stakes up the right-hand side of the seventh hole, because the length that these players can hit the ball, hitting it out onto the Beaumont course on the right-hand side there of that hole becomes a viable option for them and gives them an easier angle into the green over the ditch there, which would eschew the way that hole was designed. So therefore we have to try and stop them from doing that and actually play the hole the way it was designed. So it's a balance really between trying to see them at their best, but also make sure that the design challenge is preserved.
I know your day's work for round one isn't quite complete yet, so we'll let you wait a couple of moments, but a couple more questions, and Kevin Flanagan and Shane Flanagan are here as well. If you want to jump in, guys, with a question or comment, please do as well. Just for the casual golf fan, can you just give us a sense of, you know, the status of the Flowgas Irish Amateur Open in terms of its... Is it accurate to say that this is arguably the highest calibre event in Irish amateur golf this year, notwithstanding the four other majors, the North, South, East and West, but in terms of the international interest that a championship like this draws, is that a fair summation of it?
I think it is absolutely fair. It's measured in terms of the amount of world ranking points that are available here, in terms of the international field. Even in a non-Walker Cup year, we have a decent number of international entries. I think it wouldn't be behind the door to say it is the blue riband event for Irish amateur golf. It's also, I mean, a curiosity of it is that it's been played fewer times than, say, the West of Ireland Championship or most of the other majors, but that was due to an interregnum after the Second World War when it wasn't played for several decades. But it does date back to, you know, the 1890s and, you know, to the historic giants of Irish amateur golf or of amateur golf worldwide, the likes of Harold Hilton and John Ball, who shared the championship a few times back at the turn of the century. So it has got a history of its own, and it takes its place, I suppose, among the national open championships of Europe, and holds its own in that regard.
Okay, and one more question from me in terms of, you know, they see today 600 pars leading the championship at the moment, and they might say to themselves, well, look at the forecast, tomorrow is pretty good, Saturday looks very good, my God, 13, 14, 15 over, under, might win this championship. But it doesn't always follow that way, does it, even if the weather stays pretty favourable?
Certainly not. I mean, you know, back in 2019 here, obviously we had adverse weather over the weekend, but we had a 62 in round one, and 9 under was basically the winning score, or would have been the winning score at the end of the week. So, I mean, even with conditions favouring, I don't think that you'll see a scaling up of 6 under by 4 or anywhere near that. I think, you know, you're probably looking at, you know, I think double digits looks really good right now. I mean, any player, I think, who was offered 10 under by the end of the week would grab it with two hands, even with the weather forecast the way it is. And I'd suggest tomorrow with the... With maybe a little bit stronger wind, I don't think 6 under would be too far away from the lead after 2 rounds. So you can hold me to that, I suppose, over the weekend. But that's the current sense I think we'd have.
And just to remind listeners again, it's 4 rounds of stroke play, but the cut is after round 3, not
Correct.
Round 2, as
that's
might be
right.
a
yeah.
traditional
yeah.
point of division.
Yeah. Indeed, yeah. So that's more to the... to trying to add value from an international perspective, and several other open championships across Europe follow the same structure, including the European Amateur Championship, which is at the cut after 3 rounds.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much for your time this evening. I know you've had
a few bit
more paperwork to do. Please reassure me you don't sleep in that Golf Ireland van outside, do you? You will get some shut eye.
I'm tempted nearly to, with two small kids at home, I'm tempted to shut up shop there. I might get a better sleep than I will in my own bed. But anyway.
And in case just people listening to you for the first time, you are a Sligo man, Sligo native, so this is home for you.
In theory, this is a home event. I have it. My wife would probably say something different, but in theory, it is anyway.
Okay, well, Mark Worley, Championships and Rules Director with Golf Ireland and Tournament Director, of course, of the Flowgas Irish Am this weekend. Thank you for sitting in with us for a few moments. We'll let
Thanks,
Mark
Austin.
Away. Kevin Flanagan and Shane Flanagan are here. They've been digesting that leaderboard for the past while on their smartphones. I'm sure looking for particular golfers they were keeping an eye on. So, guys, we might get your early thoughts on what you've made on this opening day's play. I suppose, you know these guys better than I do. But if I was to try, if I had asked you to predict who might be near the top of the leaderboard or the likely guys, it looks a very familiar, heavyweight-looking leaderboard after day one. Would that be
fair? Yeah, it certainly does, Austin. And that was some three-ball, wasn't it? The Matthew McLean, Liam Nolan,
well, yes.
and Gregor, yeah. The all three are Walker Cup players, and their combined score of that three ball was 12 under par today. And I'm not so sure the last time we would have had a three ball that went around this course off the black tees, those championship tees, in 12 under par.
Yeah,
here before.
I haven't considered that, but that's a very good point.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal shooting on their behalf. And, you know, even the timing of their draw tomorrow, like just looking at the weather forecast tomorrow, the winds are going to be up. There'll be a few players playing in stronger wind. The winds will be over twice as strong tomorrow as they were today. And but the afternoon section will probably get it slightly better. So those players out a little bit later.
Kevin, as County Sligo Golf Club members, do the two of you and your fellow members here at Ross's Point privately hope there'll be a bit of breeze? Come on, test these elite guys a little bit. Don't make it a picnic for them out there.
Well, I suppose that may be the case, but I know we hope it's actually, as long as it doesn't rain. I mean, okay. I'd love to see a bit of wind, but I wouldn't want it to be raining.
Yeah, okay.
But just
what have you made of that leaderboard?
Like named Noel and Matt McLean, you would have picked them out at the start of the week. It's good to see Keith Egan has had a good start as well to the tournament, and of course TJ Ford and Rory O'Connor. I mean, that's. I'm not totally surprised by those performances. They're both quality golfers, as we know.
Okay. Can you do any terminal damage, gents, on the opening round like this? I mean, if you're a couple over par, would you be anxious, or is there still time to kind of repair any early damage?
Look at the last thing they want to do. I was over here before I was working today, as a few of us were, but before that, like at 7 o'clock this morning to watch the first guys go off and brought the dogs for a walk and came back. But I saw a few guys caught the bunkers off the first tee, and you'd find if this was in a match, they'd be taken out opening in the face on an 8-iron, trying to get it up to the green. But they were just wedging out sideways just to make sure they didn't do anything silly early on the round, took double bogeys out of play. So I'd say they would have played somewhat conservatively in some respects today. Just try to get it around, keep themselves within the tournament, but to shoot as low as they can. It's funny, Mark referred to young Sean Keeling. So, Sean Keeling's stats are probably the best of any junior we've seen for years coming through, probably since Rory.
And when you say stats, do you mean in terms of ball striking, his scoring?
In terms of his tournament results, okay, as well as a youngster, and what he has done, what he's achieved to do as a 15, 16-year-old. In amateur events, the Portuguese Open, amateur and things like that in Spain. But he has, I just noticed there, after eight holes, he double bogeyed the ninth, took a five, don't know how he did it, but he double bogeyed the ninth. He immediately came back, birdied the 10th, birdied the 11th, birdied the 12th, and finished with six straight pars. Like, that's fantastic stuff for a young... He's 16, 17 years of age.
So the double bogey got his juices going.
It must have. Yeah. It must have. I've watched him play. He swings it a bit like Rory. He'd be... Okay. Beautiful, beautiful player. Interesting to see him. I'd love to go out and watch him play. I'd love juniors from this club to go out and watch him play. But obviously that draw that we've referred to, that starts tomorrow at 24 minutes past one. So there's a group of three players there, yeah. Gregor Graham, Liam Nolan, Matthew McLean, combined 12 under par between them. They go out at 24 minutes past one tomorrow. So if any of your listeners are keen golfers and have time to go out and watch golf, you will see golf of the absolute highest standard. This is professional golf being played by amateurs. Matthew McLean has previously played in the US Masters, played in the US Open. He won the US mid-amateur, beating Hugh Foley, his good friend, in the final, and got to play all those events last year. Walker Cup player, Liam Nolan was Walker Cup player, and so was Gregor Graham. So it's fantastic to see that group. I'm unfortunately tied up at that time tomorrow. I can't get out to watch them, but I certainly will be out there on Saturday, hopefully keeping an eye on those, whoever they're playing with. But there's some great draws out there tomorrow. We do, as members, want to see some wind, but as Kevin said, as long as the rain doesn't come in. But I don't think there's any rain forecast, maybe a little bit on Sunday, I believe, but I don't think there's any rain forecast apart from that for the weekend, and we're hoping we'll miss that.
Yeah, well, the forecast certainly looks promising for the first 3 days, that is for sure. Kevin, We'll just flag some of the local scoring. We've mentioned TJ Ford and Rory O'Connor. Very impressive start by the two guys at 3 under par. Donegal's Ryan Griffin had a level par round of 71 today. David Brady,
2 over par.
West of Ireland runner-up here a few weeks ago. Your own son, Sean Flanagan, playing today, a round of 3 over par. Did you get a chance to have a word with him after his round?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, he said he didn't putt as well as he'd like to, but he was happy enough, though. He said the pace of play was slow, he said, out there. It's a bit frustrating.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to one of our guests coming up in a few moments about that. We'll introduce her in just a moment. She might have a view or two to share on that.
Just on those scores, David Brady and Sean Flanagan, they're back nine. What Mark Worley said early on about the players trying to hold together on the back nine, David was back, I think, in 40 shots and Sean was back in 38 shots. Okay. They'll both be, that's where they need to improve. Both were pretty much level par. You know, David Brady's under par.
Yeah,
playing the back nine. Yeah,
I see. Sean McLaughlin had 2 over as well.
Exactly. I spoke to his dad, Ivan, who told me that Sean hit 14 greens in regulation. Just none of the birdie putts were dropping today. So if he can improve that return tomorrow, it sounds like he's actually hitting the ball pretty well.
I saw his card earlier. He bogeyed 14 and 15, and finished with 3 pars. I think to finish on a couple over par. Anyone locally who knows Sean's game, like he hits the ball. He's a swing speed like Rory McIlroy's. He which is unusually fast. He hits the ball a tremendous distance, and if he gets good with the putter, he's capable of going very low. Even as a junior, as a 16-year-old, I think he was 17 at most, he went round Beaumont in a captain's day and 7 under par at his ease, and he's capable of going low. Like, he's at 2 over par, he's far from out of this event. He would say himself, and I know David Brady there 2 over and Sean at 3, they won't be delighted, but they won't be gutted by their score either. You know, they're still in the event.
Sure. Egan Brady at 3 over par today, a 74 for him. Let's hear though from TJ Ford, a 3 under par round of 68 today. He's currently tied for 6th at the end of day one, and he was a content enough man with how he hit the ball here at County Sligo.
Yeah, delighted. Played really well. Nice to get off to a good start. Course is playing amazing out there. It's as good as I've seen it. I think the greens are really pure, so credit to Mark and his team. But good day's work, and home now and put the feet up.
And given the forecast, is this going to be a weekend of low scoring, do you think?
I'm not sure. The golf course is really hard. You have to hit really good shots to have good scores. So it could go either way. Just had a quick look at the scoring there, and it seems to be going quite low this morning, which isn't surprising, I suppose. But if a bit of wind gets up, that can change really quickly. So we'll have to wait and see.
And does the fact that the cuts after round 3 change any tactics over the weekend?
Not really, no. It's still about just trying to shoot the lowest score possible. So it's the only championship where that is the case, but it's the kind of thing where if you're thinking about the cut, you'll end up around the cut.
So you're just thinking about putting the ball in the hole at the end of the day.
Exactly, yeah.
Well done today.
Thank you, Austin. Cheers.
That's County Sligo's TJ Ford, who played very nicely around Ross's Point on day one, 3 under par after a 68, and he is in a tie for 5th place. I said 6th, but tied for 5th on that leaderboard alongside 2-time Irish Am winner Colm Campbell from Warren Point, who played very nicely as well today. And of course, the aforementioned Rory O'Connor, also 3 under the card. Right, let's have a word with the chief referee at the Flowgas Irish Amateur Open this weekend. She's just had a cup of coffee after a busy day out there on the beautiful sunny links of County Sligo. But Áine Binchy, that must be a lovely day, an ideal weather day, first of all, to be refereeing a major championship here.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, it's been a fantastic start to the day. Long day. I've been on the golf course since 6 o'clock this morning, just coming in now. But a great start. I'm very, very happy. Okay. It's been glorious. Been glorious from literally from 6 a.m. this morning. You knew it was going to be a peach of a day. Yeah.
Well, if you nod off during the course of this interview, we'll completely understand the reason why. So we'll forgive you for that. Yeah. But on a serious point, there's a bit of stamina to that. I mean, I'm sure it's enjoyable out there, mm-hmm. but it does take its toll, I'm sure, just in the nature of things.
Absolutely. You're on high alert all the time. You literally... you know, I'm listening to the boys discussing the great golf that's been played, and even though I've been out there all day, I'm just looking at it very differently. I'm literally looking when they hit their tee shots. Is there going to be a ball search? That's what I'm not so much admiring the shot. I'm literally trying to anticipate any problems. So we're just keeping our eyes peeled all the time just to see if there's any problems, if any players need help or assistance for a ruling, any gaps on the course, where we're needed. You're on high alert all day long. So it is tough, yeah.
Okay, for the benefit of the casual golf fan, explain to me what your role is and where your role is. So are you the person the players call for when they want a ruling on a particular lie of a ball? You mentioned ball searching, we'll come back to that in a moment, but are you in an office at Tournament Hut, or are you like Severiana Ballesteros on a buggy whizzing you around from hole to hole as the day develops?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. All of those, actually, yeah. So a huge, huge part of our work is done long before the tournament starts. Course setup and planning is a very big part. So I wondered this afternoon why I was feeling stiff. I thought, what on earth's going on? And of course, I was painting the golf course all day yesterday. So that's precisely why it's come to haunt me this evening.
What does painting the golf course
mean? So we will mark all the out of bounds. What I would see, for me, I would be so disappointed if a player was to make a mistake and perhaps not realise if their ball is in a part of the course that's out of bounds and were to play it from there and to be penalised. So my role very much for the first few days is ensuring that the golf course is set up fairly and clearly, and that they can see at any stage whether they're in bounds or not, or if the ball is in a penalty area, that they're well aware that this is a penalty area. So that's very much what I would have been doing for the last few days, marking all of those, making sure the stakes are visible, the areas are painted, that if working even with the greenkeepers to see is there any areas of rough grass that should be cut back a little bit, just to make it fair and playable. So that's a huge part of the referee's work before the tournament even starts, yeah.
Before we came on air, you were talking to Kevin, mm-hmm. your brother, about
yes.
where the ball searches were today on this opening day at the Irish Am.
Right.
So there are parts of the course where a drive or a second shot goes a bit wayward,
yeah.
and we're searching for a golf ball.
Yeah, absolutely. So we would anticipate, certainly, initially, what I want is I don't want play to be slow from the very start. So we'll always, if we can, get in extra spotters on the first hole, because that's a really important one. The third hole, they're playing from the tee so far back on three, it's very hard for them sometimes to see the fairway. The pin position, or the tee positioned on three today, they could actually see down to the landing area. They were far enough forward for that. But left on three, you'll always have ball searches. But 12, left on 12 was a very busy spot. Our ball searches today, a lot of your members, of our members were out there today, worked very, very hard. They earned their crust today. They were fantastic. One lost ball, I believe, on 12, or two, maybe two, but a lot of ball searches.
Okay, just remind us, when a ball goes missing, there's a clock on the search. So how many minutes do we have to find a player?
Yeah, it's interesting. So first of all, on the tee, hopefully the players, and they've all learned at this stage to indicate to the ball spotter which side, if there's likely to be a search there. And they would be advised by the spotter if it hasn't been seen or not to play a provisional ball. But the clock doesn't start. The clock starts only when the player or his caddy join in the search. So other people can be looking first. And then you don't start the clock until the player joins in the search. So today we had two balls in quite close to each other, but maybe one was, say, maybe about 20 yards apart roughly, but it was two separate searches. So we had searched for one for 3 minutes, and then we all went over to search for the other for 3 minutes with the players. So, you know, yeah.
Okay, so it's 3 minutes
to find the ball. It's 3 minutes and 4 seconds or 3 minutes and 2 seconds. It's 3 minutes to find and identify the ball. Yeah.
When the home internationals were played here back in 2011, Kevin was the captain of that team. I remember going down the third hole, and I was a caddy in the group at the time, and we go down the third hole, and we get to the, both players hit right off the tee, and we were playing Scotland at the time, and we get there, and we're searching for a while, and then the 5 minutes at the time, the rule
was
five minutes.
It's
changed since then to 3 minutes to try and speed up play. And we gave up the search, and we said we'll all leave. And the Scottish player was very quick to say, yeah, you guys go on. I have another 30 seconds. he took his time getting down. He let everyone look for the ball for him, and he took his time walking down. Another 30 seconds to look. And he did look for 30 seconds, didn't find either ball.
And it's the caddy as well, because I had that at the Open last year in Hoylake, where a player hit a shot a little bit wayward, and he was annoyed at his caddy, who he felt had given him a bad line. Yeah. And the caddy just took off like a scalded cat to go and look for the ball. The player didn't follow him straight away. And I was just busy with another player. But then when I went up to join everyone in the search, and I said, you've 30 seconds left. And the player was like, I've only been here for a minute. And I said, yeah, but your caddy's been there. Wow. So it was a rookie error for a caddy to make to go forward to search. Yeah. Okay. But it is when the caddy or the player join the search.
So there are times where you shouldn't be in an absolute hurry to look for your ball.
You can't do unreasonably delay going forward to search. We would start the clock faster if we felt somebody was just tying his shoelaces, etc. But yeah, it is certainly in your interest to let everybody else have a look, you know. But having the ball spotters, the members who've been out there all day long, has just been fantastically helpful, because we got everybody around in 4 hours 10, which is what we had set with a lot of ball searches in that time. So that was great.
And the thing, Austin, about most of us golfers who play, there's nobody down there searching for the ball for us.
Exactly.
We have to go down, and if Kevin and myself know what it's like for you, Anya, today, being on high alert for balls going astray, because we play a lot of golf with Robbie Fitzpatrick, so it's like that for us all the time.
Well, in relation to delays, Anya, as chief referee, the three balls that go out for a championship of this stature, they're given a pace of play to try and keep to. Is that right?
Yeah, they are. And I mean, I suppose you would argue we're generous enough with 4 hours 10, but that will be standard, because that has to allow. They're playing, it's really important golf, so it's not like your casual Saturday morning competition, and we would respect that. And there are going to be ball searches. It's a very long course that we've set up for them. So we want to be fair to them, but we don't want them taking all day either, because there are players who play very fast and there are players who are very slow. And it's getting that fine balance. What would be a disaster, though, is if we have gaps out there so that we're holding players up unreasonably. You know, so we have a very strict pace of play policy that has been very heavily enforced. So we have time par in every hole. And then we see, so we had someone stationed on the second hole today, and every group that came off the second hole a minute or two over their time, we're told that straight away. And they were aware that we were watching them, you know, yeah.
But if it becomes clear that there is a player or a three ball who are particularly slow and are starting to cause a bit of congestion, does that fall to you to walk up to them and say, listen here, get a move on?
Yeah.
And, you know, given this is a serious, it's amateur golf, but it's serious amateur
Absolutely.
Golf.
Absolutely, they can't.
There are certain personalities who might react badly to that.
Yeah, and then there are certainly players, even I will have told lots of them today, look, there's a gap and you're out of position, because they're starting at 11 minute intervals. Once you go to 2 or 3 minutes outside that interval with the group in front, you're out of position. My policy is we tell them early, straight away, we nip this in the bud. So there are some who will say to you, oh, we've just had a ball search, or we were held up or whatever. But I mean, we have all the times. I will record as well. As soon as a group have been spoken to, I'm aware of that as chief referee. I'm monitoring that. And then what happens is, if they don't make up that time, if they haven't improved by the fourth hole, they'd probably get their official warning at that stage. And then if I'm monitoring them and I don't see any more improvement, then we'll come and time them. So we would have timed a few groups today. And it's in the interest of the fast player in a group, if he's playing with slow players, to have us come and time them, because we know it's not always all three players that are the problem. It may be one or two in the group. So having the group timing each player individually lets you pick out the players that are slow. They get penalised if they're taking too long.
And, you know, in terms of the feedback from the players then, I mean, is it like rugby where the referee's decision is final and there's very little back chat, or is it like soccer and Gaelic where they will argue the toss with you? Like, where does a golf referee fall in the sporting scale when it comes to that?
Yeah, well, I think there's an art to refereeing, but I mean, it's the players who are playing the golf and it's the players who are slow, and I would use that attitude with most rulings. You know, I'll give them, this is the rule. If we've given them adequate warning, and if at this stage they're going on the clock because it's very clear that there's a gap in front and people are waiting behind, that under the rules of golf, they're very clear. It's 40 seconds to play the shot, and that is what they will have. And so the stopwatch won't lie if we're timing that, and if we're fair.
I haven't checked the rule book on this, but what is the ultimate sanction you have in your toolbox? If you, I mean, can you penalise them shots?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, that's our policy very much. And this is the Golf Ireland policy, which we would have been using today. If they're, once they go on the clock and they're being timed, if they take more than 40 seconds for that shot, they will get a warning from the referee. One bad time is a warning. Second bad time is a one-stroke penalty. And a third bad time is a two-stroke penalty. And if they get any more, it's disqualified. Yeah. So we would have been timing players today.
Okay.
But luckily, there weren't any penalties incurred. Because, you know, yeah. Okay. But we are very much more on top of it than people might appreciate. You know?
Sure, it's fascinating. And it probably is a reminder to the players.
Yes.
They are watching you for the remaining 3 days of play.
Yeah.
And for people who might not be familiar with your name, Áine Binchy, finally, Áine, we've spoken to you on Ocean FM before. You know, in terms of your experience level when it comes to refereeing, while this is a prestigious event on the Irish golfing calendar, it's far from the most prestigious event you have refereed in terms of the international golfing game. You mentioned the Open Championship at Hoylake. It's not the only Open Championship you've refereed. You have a pretty impressive looking CV when it comes to refereeing major golf events.
Yeah, I've been very, very lucky. Shane was talking about the Walker Cup players there earlier on, Liam Nolan and Matthew. I refereed the Walker Cup last year, which was wonderful. Yes, I've been very lucky. I've refereed the Open. This will be my fourth Open this year now in Troon that I'll be doing. Yeah. And I've done, I've got the Canadian Open now in the next 3 weeks, in 3 weeks' time that I'll be going over to. It should be lovely.
Okay, so this is taking
and
you all over.
And she was the referee with the Cameron Smith group. And the last day of the Open in St Andrews. A pity he didn't give him a couple of penalty shots.
I had him on the Saturday. On the final group on the Saturday. I've been blessed. I mean, I fell into golf refereeing really without even understanding much about it at the time. But best thing I ever did. Fantastic.
Can you make a living from being a golf referee?
Oh, there are absolutely professional referees who work for the tours full time. I mean, my husband thinks I probably do it full time, doing about 10 championships a year. But no, I volunteer. But that's the great thing about golf. And for a lot of the golfers, you know, some of them will go into professional golf playing. But there are great other careers. A lot of the referees on tour are ex-professional players.
Michael Hoey is one
to name, you know, yeah. And there's David Williams. There's quite a few of them working on the tours who would have all played international golf. And you know, if you love the sport, it's a fantastic... Refereeing is fantastic. It's not just the rulings and the penalties. It's course setup. It's planning the tournament. It's all of that, you know.
Thank you for the insight on the refereeing. First of all, I'm going to be looking at ball searches on the 12th and looking for stopwatches out on the golf course in a whole new light after that. Áine, you're welcome to stay with us. We're going to chat here about the golf, but feel free to chip in if you'd like to, or grab a cup of coffee, because I know you've had a long day.
Thank you very much this morning.
Áine Binchy, chief referee. So Jess, let me come back to Kevin and Shane as well. In terms of golfers you know here in this field, that this week, the course in its current condition, the conditions that it might suit best, are there names there that you're very sharp? You predicted the winner of the West of Ireland a few weeks ago, so I'm not putting any pressure on you, Shane Flanagan. But I mean, are there golfers out there, do you think, this sort of event might suit them?
Yeah, Kevin and I would have, we'd hold Keelan Rafferty in very high regard. He's a superb golfer. Absolutely superb golfer. He got a very unlucky during COVID not to get a Walker Cup place. He probably was in a Walker Cup place. No golf being played in Europe. Golf being played in colleges in the States, and was probably leapfrogged by Matt Fitzpatrick's brother Alex was one of them, and others. So he was probably unlucky not to get Walker Cup. He's on a couple over par, I think, there, with a couple over par for his back nine. You see Paul O'Hanlon, who was beaten semi-finalist by David Brady in the finals. He had a very colourful card today. Six pars. Six birdies, four bogeys and two double bogeys, including one on the 17th. So he had a very colourful card today. If he can get rid of some of those, he's a quality player.
Yeah, you obviously feel the guys are on two over par, and there are some serious names at two over par. I'm going to read out a few of them here too. You've mentioned Keelan Rafferty, Paul Coughlan, who we who won the Munster Scratch Cup at the weekend. Quinton Carew, I've heard you guys eulogise him quite a bit around County Sligo Golf Links. And there was one other name there that jumped out at me as somebody. Matthew Wilson is there as well.
It was Paul Coughlin. I meant to say that colourful card. If you look at it, if you open up his card, you'll see it. Paul Coughlin.
Right, okay.
A very colourful card. It's
Those guys aren't out of it yet. They can claw this back.
Absolutely, yeah. I would say, yeah, it'll be tomorrow evening before you'll get a good idea of where you have to be set up for the weekend. Just a comment there on Joe O'Neill. He had a great West of Ireland here from Bearhaven, and at one stage Robbie Fitzpatrick mentioned that he'd never heard of Bearhaven.
And we got an email about that from the Bearhaven Tidy Towns group to remind us where it was located. So Joe has got his fan club, yeah.
It's a nine-hole course, I believe, and so he obviously loves this place. Colly Campbell is dangerous there. He's won this tournament twice, which is exceptional.
And one guy I want to ask you about, guys, because he's come very close to winning here at County Sligo on a couple of occasions, and that's Liam Nolan. Galway, who was a West of Ireland finalist, and clearly a round of 66, Shane, he knows his way around this length.
Yeah, if you've watched him play, like his ball striking is absolutely phenomenally good. He's a tall, well-built man who hits the ball some distance, but he's a very pure iron striker as well. He's an all-round brilliant golfer. As I say, a Walker Cup player, which is one of the
great attitude as well.
Great attitude. Last time when he finished runner-up in the West of Ireland, was it runner-up or third? He finished anyway.
He came second. He's been in the final,
but he
Al-Fahy.
But when it was a stroke play event.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He wasn't runner-up that year.
You know, even maybe third or fourth. But anyway, he came in, he had a decent round in the last. And for him to realise that he had finished, say, in the top four, he was as happy as if he had won the event, because what that got him in terms of ranking points and where that would bring him into the... I remember chatting to him afterwards, and he was maybe 19 at the time. But you could tell then that his future in the game is very, very good. He's a bright lad as well. The only reason he did not come to the West of Ireland was he had exams on at the time. He'd love to have played in it, but exams on, so couldn't get here. He will not be far away from the top of the leaderboard at the end of this event. He certainly will be close to it. That three ball should not be close, far away from the top of the leaderboard at the end of the event.
And speaking of exams, Kevin Flanagan, the man at the top of the leaderboard, is 18 years young. He's preparing for his Leaving Cert in Louth. Gavin Tiernan, I don't know too much about him, but that's, in any championship, a round of 600 par 65 is good going.
Absolutely brilliant, yeah. He's played boys golf for Ireland, played in the European team with Aegon Brady last year, and was on the winning boys home internationals team then later in the year. He's heading off to Tennessee, I think, in September, pending his results. I'm sure that'll work out for him.
He birdied the third, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, the eighth on the way out. And it was interesting, Shane, that Mark Worley said the two nines were playing even. You know, you'd expect maybe that the back nine would be a
bit harder.
Generally, is generally a tougher ask, but that doesn't seem to have been the case on day one.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to have been the case. And
anytime you birdie six, seven, and eight,
that's
special.
3-3-3 there, yeah. And he thought that was after birdieing the fifth. So, but and I noticed that I did see, I think it was David Brady's card earlier that I looked at. I think David was two or three under after seven, with pars on the third and the fifth, the two par fives where you normally make up scores at this. And it slipped for him after that. But getting back to that leaderboard, like, we have two homegrown players here in TJ Ford and Rory O'Connor, both on three under, both in a great position, and this would probably be an easier event pressure wise for them to win. The West of Ireland just holds that added bit of pressure for a local. We as a club probably feel like we own that event and it's ours in some respects, whereas this is a national event, and like Mark Worley, it feels like it's Mark Worley's event and Golf Ireland's event, whereas we as a club probably feel, you know, more passion, but certainly more pressure the players would feel for the West, I would say.
And that's probably a good note on which to finish, Kevin. I mean, the galleries will grow as we get to the business end of this championship. But in a way, can some of these guys play with a bit more freedom in a championship like this?
Yeah, stroke play suits certain people. And the better players tend to prefer stroke play. They think they have a better chance in stroke play. We'll have we will have a reduced field of 50 plus ties, I think, on
Sunday.
So, you know, it'd be fantastic free entertainment for anyone who wants to come out and have a look.
Well, if we leave aside your son, we'll obviously know you'd root for him anyway. But if you do, each of you want to finish by picking who you think might win this championship this Sunday? If it's, or I'll let
you.
Well,
I'm going to go first.
I'll give you two. Go ahead. Okay, Kevin has something in mind.
I really fancy Liam Nolan's chances. I think he'll be very hard to beat.
Okay. And he's certainly signalled that with his round of 500.
Well, to be
today.
Different, because I probably would have sided with Kevin on that one now. I think he'll also be very hard to beat. I wish this fella Gavin Tiernan, it's lovely to see an 18-year-old at the top of the leaderboard. I hope he's thereabouts at the end. But I will... I see Keith Egan is on 200, by the way. He was a prediction for this. That's a great start. It'd be hard to follow up one win with the other, but... I think Matthew McLean is coming good. Let's wait and see. But look at, after the first round he's been played, obviously we're picking from the top of the leaderboard. Yeah, yeah. Who knows where it'll come from? But
Sean Keeling might come through.
Yeah, you never know.
He's right in it, yeah, after a great back nine.
Well, there are so many possibilities, folks, and that's the beauty of golf and of this Flowgas Irish Amateur Championship. One round down, three more to come. And over the next few days, you can follow the live scoring on the Golf Ireland website. Excellent scoring in real time as it happens there. And we'll be bringing you extensive live coverage, updates on Friday, and we'll have live coverage on Saturday. And we're live from Sunday from 2 o'clock with Ocean FM Sport to bring you the final round. The top 50 in ties will make it through to the final day's play, and you'll be able to follow that with us here on Sunday afternoon here on Ocean FM. Kevin and Shane, thank you very much for your thoughts and contributions.
Thanks.
Enjoy the next 3 days of golf.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And from us all here at County Sligo Golf Club, it's bye-bye.
Golf's Flowgas Irish Am at County Sligo Golf Club with Flowgas, proud sponsor of the Irish Men's Amateur Open Championship 2024.